From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 319 with guest Craig Utley, recorded Wednesday, March 29th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm at DevTeach in Toronto, Ontario today, and recording various shows. This one is with Craig Utley, and Craig is a senior architect with CTS and a former program manager with the SQL Server Customer Advisory Team, where he focused on business intelligence. And Craig's been involved in the Microsoft BI space since the betas of SQL 7, ooh, that's a while ago, where he helped write Microsoft's first data warehousing course. Welcome, sir.
Why, thank you. And yes, it has been a while, and that's, I've earned this gray hair that I have.
Well, and I remember when SQL 7 came out, because OLAP services were just sort of off the side. They didn't install by default. You just, if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't know anything about it. And it was amazing, actually, because I had worked in Arbor S-Base, and that was $150,000 just to get started. And here was this, I mean, granted, not as sophisticated a product, but you couldn't argue with the price tag.
I think that's really what got customers excited about it was free. It was included. They'd already paid for it. Mm-hmm. And the solutions at the time, as you say, were $150,000 plus. You know, Teradata was multi-million dollars
sure.
back then.
Yeah, MicroStrategy.
Exactly.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, so it was an exciting product. It was something that was great. It was new. And, of course, it came with some other new stuff like English Query, which we now try to forget about. But, you know, OLAP Services brought this really powerful engine to SQL, and I dove right in. I really loved it. It made sense to me right away, and I've been working with it ever since.
Yeah, I did a talk right after OLAP Services came out, and I learned it, and then I did a talk, just sort of an intro to OLAP Services, and it was one of those talks where people ran out of the room towards the end of the talk because they had to call their boss. Is it, you know, that whole line of, how many people here running SQL 7? And the whole, you own this, and this is what it can do. And they flipped.
Yeah, they run out of my sessions sometimes too, but not for the same reasons. but yes, it is exciting. It still is.
Yeah.
And Microsoft, you know, even though the multidimensional engine is relatively unchanged mm-hmm. since 2005, the tabular engine has reinvigorated some people, and still just the technology, you know, fortunately BI is much more mainstream than when I got started with it, and I've gotten to ride that wave.
It's never been easy though. There's always a struggle to actually be successful. You know, business intelligence says it all, right? It's about being intelligent about your business. And I'm surprised how much, frankly, dumbness there is out there. People, you come in as a consultant, try and help them with this, and they really don't know what are the important metrics of their business.
It's beyond just not knowing the metrics as well. It's BI projects are complicated projects. And any complicated IT project has a good chance of failure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, customers not knowing what they want is certainly one of those reasons.
Right. Well, you know, they've read CIO magazine. They know they want business intelligence. They just think it comes in a squirt can and you can spray it on everybody.
Sadly, that is true. I worked with a customer and the CFO had been to a conference. Mm-hmm. And had seen a demo of a balanced scorecard product.
Right.
And I was in there talking to her about another product, and she said, and I was explaining, you know, the ETL process and kind of building cubes, and then this is what the final result would look like.
Right.
And she goes, but I can just buy this other product and we don't have to do any of that. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, we just install it and it just pulls the data automatically and it's done. And she truly believed
right.
that.
She had been duped.
Oh, yes. And so that's the way they went. I never did find out how it went for them.
Yeah, but. And I've had customers where I said, you know what? you know, before we get bad blood between each other, where I try and explain how wrong you are and you think I'm just trying to gouge you for money, here's my card. Go try that. And when it doesn't go well, you know, no hard feelings, I'll come back and help you again. And, you know, sometimes you save them and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, that is true. And it's one of the things I've done that a number of times with clients, and you just walk away going, well, I know that I'll hear from them later.
Eventually.
And you typically do.
Yeah. So. But you just try and be positive. It's like, you've been fooled. I'm not going to be the one to tell you. You can learn this empirically if you really want to. You know, we'll move from there. The other thing is, you know, we talk about, this is just OLAP cubes. Data warehousing to me is a whole other level of a problem. How do you define these things?
You know, it's interesting. There are a lot of different ways of defining it. For me, data warehousing is kind of the ETL into a dimensional model process, and it kind of stops there. Or maybe then building a cube, let's say, with the UDM. Then business intelligence kind of adds on to that, all the delivery pieces, the scorecards, the dashboards, the reports, the ad hoc tools, hopefully the intelligence portion, and data mining would fall
in. Actually finding stuff you didn't know about.
Exactly.
But you don't hear a lot of people talking about warehousing anymore. Just this idea of, let's organize all these disparate data sources into a form that we can easily turn into cubes or turn into intelligence, so forth. But it's almost an obsolete term.
It is. Business intelligence has really replaced it. And I use them interchangeably some.
Okay.
But, you know, I do try to make the distinction when I'm talking to people that for me, BI is the whole solution, especially the delivery piece, whereas data warehousing is that specific, you know, ETL into some dimensional model and then maybe building a cube.
And specifically disparate data sources, like just trying to get everything together into a place where you can work with it well.
Yes.
Although the other thing is that pretty much where the data lives now is pretty accessible. Like, it's just not as hard to extract data as it used to be a few years ago.
Unless it's in Excel. And, you know, Excel in a row and column format is fine.
Right.
But when people start moving stuff around and putting, you know, well, put a little data over here, a little there, and formatting it and such, it's a nightmare to
That's
pull.
A great challenge to inventory the data of a company and just realize how much unique knowledge is stored only in Excel.
It's generally a very high percentage.
It's shocking, really.
It's sad. Yeah. Yes.
And not for any intent.
No.
That just, you know, you picked up the tool you had in front of you, you knew how to use to solve the problem you had at the time, and you kept solving problems until you built up a substantial asset in a form that's incredibly vulnerable and hard to access.
It is. And, you know, a lot of this is driven by financial people, and I understand that, and they know and love Excel, and that's fine. And I think Microsoft has done some smart things in making Excel the front-end tool for a lot of BI.
Yeah, I appreciate that thinking, that the pivot tables and that all those data connectors. So, you love Excel, you can do this.
That's right. And now with 2013, if you buy the correct version, you get PowerView, which is unbelievably amazing.
It's the correct version of Excel?
Yes. Of Office. It's the Professional Plus.
Ah, okay. It's not Professional. Professional Plus.
Right.
These are additional add-ins into Excel.
Right. They come with it, but only if you buy the specific versions.
Okay.
So it's a bit confusing for customers, but that's why I'm here. So
right. It keeps us all employed, right?
That's right.
That kind of confusion. So where do folks get started now with business intelligence? Or maybe we should talk about, where do you go wrong? Because I just don't see data warehousing projects anymore. It's a BI project.
That's right.
Is there a decision? Do we need data warehousing or not?
Sometimes there is. There is that perception, at least. I have customers who come to me and they're like, oh, we want a BI solution, and that's great. And I start talking about ETL and a dimensional model, and they're like, oh, we don't want any of that. We just want, you know, the solution. And
give me the dashboard.
Yeah, and I explain to them, well, okay. And Microsoft specifically has done some push around the both Power Pivot, now the Tabular model, they're kind of interchangeable for this, where they say, well, you don't have to go through a whole, you know, ETL process. You can use it, the data as it is. And technically, that's correct.
Right.
But I think it does a disservice to a lot of customers, because they think, oh, we can just point at all these different sources.
And are all those sources SQL?
Well, SQL, you know, and when we talk SQL, it could be SQL, Oracle.
Right, any you know, of any, the RDBMSs yeah, with good connectors. Right,
or Excel, or text files, or anything.
Okay.
You know, they just say you point at all this, and you bring it together and build a semantic model, and you can then use it.
Where does that semantic model live, if not in an OLAP cube?
Well, it lives either in the tabular model on the server, or right. It lives in a power pivot model inside the Excel spreadsheet.
Okay. So, yeah, now we're back to this, all my intelligence is stored in a spreadsheet.
Well, exactly. And to me, I don't have a problem with being able to tell customers, we don't have to go through a full ETL mm-hmm. process, but you lose so much if you don't, especially on the data cleansing side. And
so, quality data problems. What about performance problems?
Well, if we bring it into the tabular model or power pivot, then it's all cached
okay.
in that model. So performance generally isn't too bad. And I think those are great tools, especially power pivot for prototyping.
Sure.
But
also just exploring around this whole idea of we don't know what we want or what we can learn from our data.
Exactly.
Can we start getting some views so that, you know, everybody wants a dashboard. They just don't know what they want on the dashboard. They want arrows. It's going up or it's going down.
That's right.
But what does that arrow mean? So I guess can you prototype all of that just directly in Power Pivot?
You could, yes. Okay. Absolutely. And that's easy to do. And it's good to do that. I'm a big proponent of putting things in front of customers quickly.
Right.
And often because, you know, our clients don't necessarily know what they want. They think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to tell technical people. It's not their fault that they can't describe it well
yeah.
because they don't think in the same terms we do and they don't always speak the same language. So if we can show them things quickly, we can usually zero in on what they're after
right.
in a better fashion and give them something that's more usable.
Now, what we're always running the risk of showing wrong data if we haven't gone through you know a lot of work
yes.
to make the data clean. I mean, I ran into this disturbingly large number more than a decade ago, 2 decades ago, where you generate a report where the sales total is wrong and your VP of sales looks at it and goes, this is not the sales total. And at that point, your report is not credible. Like once you lose that credibility, it's so hard to get it back.
And this is a challenge we always face is showing something you're prototyping and you go in and say, now look, these numbers don't mean anything. I'm worried more about the format.
Right.
And the second you show it to them, they go, well, those numbers don't work. And you're like,
I know.
You can't get them off. I just told you they're not going to be
yep.
right. I'm not worried about these numbers. I'm asking about the format and the flow and the analytic capabilities. Yeah. But those numbers aren't right. And it's such a different mindset because for me, I see different clients all the time.
Sure.
And so the numbers don't mean anything to me.
Right. They mean the world to them.
But it's all that they can think about. So in that situation, I do one of two things. I either get to a point where it may be very simple, but at least I'm showing them something that's correct in
right.
their environment, or I'm showing them someone else's data.
Right.
AdventureWorks, for example.
So they don't care about it.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
That was tough.
But this is double whammy. They already told you they didn't want to do the pre-work. They just wanted right. to go to the dashboard. And the pre-work's all about getting the numbers right.
I know.
And now when you show them the dashboard the number's wrong, they're upset about it.
Right. Yeah, it's really a challenge today because a lot of them don't understand building the foundation. I'm working with a customer right now that keeps saying, well, why are you doing all this? And all this being, this is automating the data capture because right,
right
now it takes them 2 weeks of manipulating data in spreadsheets, which they then send to a third party who puts it in a SQL table and builds a cube for it, and then they can see it.
Wow.
And yet they can't understand why I'm studying the data sources to try to do ETL.
Right. We're trying to eliminate the 2 weeks.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what you wanted?
And they keep going, well, that's not so important. And I'm like, it really is.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. Nothing worse than incorrect information you can act on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's the scary part about a dashboard is that you've consolidated a huge amount of information into a very simple view. So if that information isn't right, like you can send these guys way off the wrong path.
That is very true. And one of the statistics in the BI or data warehousing world mm-hmm. is that on a typical project, ETL is 60 to 80% of the effort.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah, it's huge. And the reason, and I tell people it may not be during the initial development, but data cleansing is one of the big issues, your data quality issues. Mm-hmm. And so you go through and you fix as much of that as possible. But users are amazing people, and they always find new ways to get bad data into the system. They're really good at that.
Really good at it.
So over time, you're having to go back and tweak as new data, new bad data gets in. You have to correct for that, or data formats change. A lot of my customers now have data coming in from outside vendors, and they don't have control over it.
Sure.
So, you know, I try to warn customers up front. The ETL is a big effort, and you're going to have more data quality problems than you expect.
Yeah. You don't realize how many errors there actually are. And even if they're not just consolidation errors, it's like, how many times is this customer in the system? You know, those kinds of things. And you also start to, as you start tearing apart their existing flow, realize how many compensating mechanisms they have for the fact the source data has problems.
That's correct.
And you got to reintroduce all of those when you go through the ETL process.
I have a customer right now that freely admit that they don't have a standard corporate definition for a customer.
Nice.
And the CEO will say, how many customers did we add last month? And he'll get three different answers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And none of them are correct or incorrect. It's that different departments count them different ways.
Sure.
And, you know, to me, a customer is somebody that gives me money. That's easy. Yep. But it's not always that easy in the real world, as we know. So that is, you know, that gets us in the whole area of master data management and setting up corporate definitions, and data governance is becoming a much bigger issue as BI becomes more common and more important to organizations.
Now, it strikes me that this is a good exercise for a company to go through, that you're forcing them in the form of this project to think about their business as a whole. Like that to me seems like a very positive force. It's just that nobody ever hires you to do that part.
No.
They hire you to make a dashboard.
That is correct, because the dashboard is sexy and hopefully actionable.
Yes.
Data governance, setting up master data management is very unsexy. It's very uncool. And while there is business value behind it, there's nothing really to show.
Right.
You can walk around and say, our data is better now. And people are like, well, yeah, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, you worked on that for 3 months. I remember it as the 3 months you didn't ship anything.
Exactly. Exactly. I remember a lot of money disappearing during those 3 months. Right. And that's, you know, that's the constant struggle of IT being the black hole for a lot of organizations. And that's why BI is so hot, because, boy, people get value out of it and they really see the results.
Right.
And for some of that background stuff, they don't.
What do you see as the relationship to, quote, big data and business intelligence?
You know, big data, I think, is kind of the next evolution. Mm-hmm. There are some challenges with big data. You know, the definition, it's not just a large data volume.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's velocity, and there are other factors to it. And reporting on it actually is a bit of a challenge in a lot of cases. The reporting side is very slow. It's kind of like, you know, taking OLTP to the extreme, where OLTP was fast for inserts, updates, and deletes.
Right.
It's made for transactions. Well, big data is, and there are different flavors of it, but a lot of times it's for even higher transaction at the expense of pulling data back out. So I think, and this is just my guess, Richard, I don't, you know, if I could predict the future, I'd be retired, not sitting here talking to you, but I think that we're going to see the current BI tools and some of the big data technology kind of merging together some point.
Yeah.
I like this ability of capturing very high volumes or high velocity data, but we still need a way to report on it. Mm-hmm. And I know several customers that are doing Hadoop now, and yet they're still building cubes off of that Hadoop data and reporting against it.
Well, because it gives them good tooling to be able to analyze the data.
Yeah. Pulling the data back out straight from Hadoop for them is a real challenge. So they need better tools.
I also think that there's a big part in the data mining of this, that it's not just the intuitive pivoter trying to find data, but going about this algorithmically to really find new information you didn't know about your data.
I am shocked at how few customers care about the data mining side of things. You would think you've just spent all this money, you've built this great solution, now let's add some mining on top to discover, is there anything that the data shows us that we don't know yet?
Right.
And most customers, that's a tough sell for some reason. You would think that would be the easiest sell, but I have a hard time convincing them to take that next step.
Is it just that everyone thinks they know?
Partly it's everyone thinks they know, and data mining, for all our great tools, and they're getting better every day, they require a pretty specific knowledge still. And I'm not a statistician. I don't remember the difference between naive Bayes versus, you know, some of the other algorithms.
Right.
I have to look it up. And
yeah, so, a lot of data mining just looks like voodoo when you run through the wizards.
It absolutely does.
And the demos are always great for pulling out meaningful data. But doing that with your own data.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can build an AdventureWorks model and show you real easily, oh, these are the people we should target as this marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. But that's all made up data, too. So
right.
It just happens to fit the model very well.
Very cleanly. It's amazing how that works out.
It is.
Darn demos. So, yeah, I guess one of the things you find with a lot of data mining efforts is just finding meaningful results. Are we looking at things that matter? Can you find something statistically relevant?
That's true. And again, the tools are getting better, not necessarily any specific Microsoft tools, but there are a lot of third-party companies working on the data mining aspects on the Microsoft stack, and it's really starting to bear fruit. I've seen some, again, demos, but I've seen some products lately that are doing a really good job of guiding people to the right models and giving some really good results.
But none of these things seem like the particular failure point of a project.
No, BI projects, again, they're complex projects.
Sure.
And so, you know, those have a high rate of failure anyway. And I did some research a while back. You'll love this. Mm-hmm. And it said that BI projects fail, the failure rate's 20 to 80%. I'm like, well, that's really specific. great. But, you know, BI projects, some of it's technical. A lot of it's non-technical.
Right.
Some of the biggest problems I see, data quality, I mentioned that earlier.
Sure.
That can sink a project. Politics is a tough one, and I see that all the time. I did a project for a customer, and they had six factories in the same area.
Right.
And each factory had a plant manager for it, and I was meeting with those six plant managers. And we were talking about parts. They all used a lot of similar parts, but they had different part numbers in each building, which
Ouch.
Drove us crazy. So one part, you know, one factory's running low. They try to get it from the other factories, and they can't. So we were trying to consolidate part numbers. And these six managers said, well, I'm not giving you my data. That's mine.
You work for the same company.
That's what I said. I said, you work for... And so the VP of manufacturing had to get involved and tell these people, you're giving the data. Crazy. Okay, so politics happens a lot.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of these projects are very cross-cutting.
They are.
The value is in the cross-cut, which means there's lots of people who affect the outcome of the project without necessarily benefiting hugely from it.
Well, and that's a great point, because that's another part of the politics, is people hear there's a BI project finally going on, and they throw a lot of things into it. And
yes.
So the scope just balloons almost instantly sometimes. So what I try to tell people is to get around the political thing. I hate doing the politics. Mm-hmm. Some people dive in and love that. I can't stand it. You have to go in with a problem that you're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And finding a business champion is great. And the higher up in the organization, the better, because they can cut through the red tape. The CFO, in my opinion, is kind of the ultimate champion, because they control all the purse strings anyway.
Right.
But that's the person who should be setting this. Another reason for failure, and it ties into this, is I don't believe that BI projects are normally IT projects.
Really?
Yeah. IT's doing the work.
Right.
But it should be driven by the business.
Right.
Solving a business need.
But I don't know that any IT group would initiate a BI project.
Oh, it happens all the time,
really?
Though. That's the sad thing. That's why I say it shouldn't be.
Yeah, because I would think it's the CFO comes back from a conference or reads a magazine and says, oh, we need some of this.
No, I've seen a number of BI projects done by the IT group, because they're like, well, we have all the data. Let's just build some cubes.
What's motivating them? Why would they do that?
Well, there's one good reason and a lot of bad reasons. I'll give you the bad reasons first. It's just because it's new and it's cool, right, and they think it's awesome.
Play with our toys.
Right. We'll play with our toys and we'll show the business some value. Inevitably, what happens is they don't show the business any value from that, because IT people, and I'm one of them, but we think differently than a lot of other people.
Sure.
I'll give you a real quick story. Went into a company, it was an insurance company, and the CEO comes in to the meeting and says, I can't get this out of our warehouse. And he dropped a big stack of papers on the desk, and it was a 400-page report. And I said, okay, what do you do with this report? He said, I go through it and look for customers who've paid us over, you know, the past 6 months or whatever, and whose payments have dropped off. So they've started dropping some of our services.
Right.
And we call them and say, did anything happen? Can we correct this or whatever? And I said, what if I gave you one screen that showed you the 25 customers with the biggest drop in last month's purchases versus the average of the previous 6 months? And he's just like,
you could do that?
Oh my God, that would be brilliant. And see, IT had built this warehouse.
Right.
And never asked this guy what he did, what he needed.
Right.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, it happens all the time. But I like, you know, you said the key statement to me, which is there is this belief inside of IT, we need to show the business some value, that we're not just a cost center. And we could do that, but not if we don't gather the requirements up front.
Right. And IT, you know, they're sometimes bad about not gathering those requirements. The one case where I think IT initiates a warehousing project and it makes sense is to help with some of their internal reporting.
Right. So actually understanding what they're spending their time on.
Well, and not just that, but also to help generate reports for the rest of the business.
Right.
That sometimes, but the business doesn't care whether it's coming from a warehouse or OLTP or whatever.
The technology is not the important part. The visibility into what's going on is the important part.
But for delivering analytics to the business, the business should be driving that whole process.
So is it just, there's an interesting failure mode, but I got to think even when the business wants it, the bulk of the effort is not something they're even cognizant of. So is it just not meeting expectations for time and effort?
It's not meeting expectations for time and effort. Again, they don't see the ETL process, and that's 60-80% of the effort usually. So they don't see that.
Well, I also think as an IT guy, I try to talk to a business guy about how dirty our data is. He's going to blame that on me anyway. Well, why'd you let it get dirty?
But you know, it's funny. I think one of the best things you can do to find bad data is a BI project. I don't think there's any way better. And plus, I always show it to the business right away.
Right.
I create an unknown in every dimension and I tie things to it. And I did some work for a government agency and they had hours reported at their facility. The people would have to come and badge in and punch in a 3-digit code for their department.
Right.
40% of their hours were against departments that didn't exist. 40%. And they had no clue.
They had never known that was going on.
No.
They thought they were reporting everything just fine.
Yeah, they had no clue. And I'm like, did you never even run a query to Matt? But they hadn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the kinds of things, it's useful to show that to the business. And then they at least understood immediately. They formed a team that day to fix the problem.
We really need to have people assigning to departments that exist. Well, the bigger thing here is if they're actually using it as some kind of cost accounting.
Exactly.
40% of your costs are being misassigned at minimum, right? Assigned to nothing. How many times was an existing department entered, but not the right department on top of that?
Yes.
I really appreciate that story, just the sense of we think about data cleanliness from a very technical perspective. Actually reflecting it back on a business issue is where you're going to get some power from this.
Yes. I always try to show them that bad data and let them see what the impact of that is. Now, honestly, in some cases, if 0.5% of your data is bad and it's going to cost $5 million to clean it up, it's probably not worth it.
Yeah, just there is a threshold of effort,
right,
which is not worth dealing with anymore.
But that's why you have to show it to them.
Have you run across situations where you have folks that want metrics that aren't actionable? Like they have vanity metrics? That this is the number they like showing their boss because it always is good news?
Sort of. I have customers a lot of times who want numbers that they're not currently collecting.
Right.
And so that always is interesting. We need this. Well, where, you know, how are you collecting it today? Well, we're not. Okay. Well, we're going to figure that out.
You have to collect it for me to be able to analyze it for you.
Yeah. And so that's a real common issue.
But also, why do you need this? Like, the idea of an actual metric is a really interesting one. What would you do if you saw that number go down? What would you do if you saw that number go up? Like, what does that mean?
Right. And one of the things, you know, everybody knows financial metrics. That's easy. We collect sales and we know, you know, what that is. A lot of times the metrics that people want that they're not currently collecting are employee and customer survey type information.
Soft measures.
Yes. So, for example, if you ask the employees of your organization to rate, you know, how happy they are and all this stuff, and the results are bad, okay, what do you do?
Right.
You know, now that's the question.
Yeah.
And how do you address that? And you know, those are tough because you typically only measure that once a year. So you have to wait a whole year to find out if your results had any impact.
And at the same time, you can't go around surveying everybody every 15 minutes to see if things are getting better.
No, you can't. That would be more useful, but yes, it would. Yeah. Well, it's not realistic.
It's interesting how the surveying process distorts that data too. It's like the fact that you are asking these questions affects how I'm going to answer them.
And most employees never believe that their employee survey is truly anonymous anyway.
Right.
So they're very leery
yes.
of being totally honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, those are measures that some customers collect and it's a long time to know if your actions had any impact. And it's hard to figure out what those actions should be in the first place.
And I really wrestle with that survey model at all. I mean, isn't the ultimate action that matters the customer making a purchase?
Yes.
Like, shouldn't we be acting on that data first and foremost? I mean, I really like, again, your story about how much are people buying this month versus last month. Like, let's look for customers that are declining precipitously. Because there's the action that really matters.
Exactly.
And you know, You have an actionable behavior to it, and you can measure the result from that. If they start buying more again, then obviously you've done something right. And if they don't, then you know you were ineffective.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges we run into especially when building scorecards and the whole concept of balanced scorecards versus business scorecards and all that. But one is that financial indicators tend to be trailing indicators.
Right.
And one of the leading indicators is supposed to be focus groups and things like that with customers. So, you know, sometimes just discovering what do we need to measure and when is part of the challenge of this.
Pretty powerful stuff.
So, you know, that gets totally away from the technical side of things and becomes more about business consulting than just the IT world.
Which, again, is a hard thing to sell. But as an external consultant brought in to be successful with the BI project, sometimes you have to take on that job because it is the actual barrier to successful delivery.
That's right.
Right, helping a company really understand the metrics that matter to them.
Helping them understand that and having some business knowledge, even if you don't know their specific business. You know, you've seen a number of companies now, and so you have a sense for things that work and don't work in other companies. And hopefully we can convince our customers that we have that kind of knowledge. You know, I go in, I at least have a business degree, and that helps me sometimes when I can start talking about some of the financial aspects of the organization and understanding that. But, you know, I still spend most of my time with the technology, but there are times where you just have to sit down and say, you know, from a reporting perspective, these measures don't help you, or these do, and this is what you should be doing to capture these, and you really have to talk about just straight from a business standpoint.
Sure. Craig, it's been a lot of fun talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Richard, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.